Step into Mind Matters, where we reveal the high-stakes world of CEOs, from their first-day jitters to game-changing strategies, and equip you with invaluable insights and practical advice essential for your personal growth and leadership journey. And now, Mind Matters.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Kendall Raichler, your host today, and we're thrilled to have a remarkable guest on our podcast today. He brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise as the CEO of SBA Loan Group. And I can't wait to dive into an insightful conversation with him. Get ready for an engaging and informative episode with the CEO, Yanky Markowitz. Thank you, Yanky, for coming to the show with us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Before we dive in, I would like to have our listeners understand a little bit more about your background, where you started, how you got to where you were, and some of the challenges. So if you can give a brief bio, that would be wonderful.
Sure. So, well, how I got to where I got to is a series of accidents and divine providence. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, to go back, I started off my career as an agent for New York Life. It's an insurance company here in New York, well, in America, but we're based out of New York, and I worked out of the city. And one of the reasons why I chose that is I was recruited. Someone said, I think you'd be a great fit. And I chose that because of its entrepreneurial nature, meaning you had the ability of performing as best as you can. You're not given a salary. It's you kill what you eat, or you eat what you kill, sorry. And the sky's the limit. So I like that. I like that concept. And while I was there, I had to sort of differentiate myself. There was a lot of people in the community or a lot of people doing it. So what makes me unique or what makes me different? And to the credit of my manager, he told me, A, if you want to be different and if you want to make more money, you have to go after bigger clients. And the way to go after bigger clients is to learn estate planning and pension plan, because you can utilize life insurance for that. At that time, they were talking about appealing the state tax exemption. So I went into that. I started to meet and go after high net worth individuals and people who needed estate planning. And ultimately, over the time, I would have high net worth clients, and I had people with not such high net worth. Mm-hmm. And I started to connect them and put deals together, sort of syndicate deals. And I started to make more money that way than in life insurance. So I went away from life insurance, and I started to syndicate deals and started creating small little niches in different industries, such as real estate as well. And got involved a little bit with investment banking. I went into the real estate world because I was finding people who needed money from investors. Mm-hmm. To get into those deals. And ultimately, I would find deals and flip deals. And I worked with one of the largest developers at the time in New York called United Homes. And I thought I was brilliant, right? As everybody does. If I could find a property for X and I could sell it to a person for Y, and then they could build something and then sell it for Z, why shouldn't I get it for X and build it myself, take away the middleman, and make all that money as well? Yep. I wanted development. And I did pretty well in the beginning. And then came 2007, 2008. And God showed me that you're not the boss, right? There's a famous expression, a man plans and God laughs. And I realized I had to go into... Not that I had to go, you could still do investments, but let's have something more with a steady revenue stream. And I looked into buying my own business. And I was looking at a DME business, a durable medical equipment. It's still around today, at least the industry is still around today. But the individual was looking to sell it. He was an older gentleman. He was retiring. Great guy. And he said, how are you coming with the financing? So I explained to my background, I was going to put together some investors and we're going to come together for somebody with a history or industry knowledge. And he said, that's great. But why not get rid of an investor and take an SBA loan? Now, at that time, I'm going back to 2010, 2011, I knew there was something called SBA. I understood there was a loan program, but I had no knowledge of the program or the teaching of the program. So he told me that he actually bought this business from the previous owner, 20, 30 years before that. And he got it as failing. So I said, okay, great. Let me look into it. And I called up a few mortgage brokers that I knew or a few bankers that I knew, and none of them knew about the program. Or rather, no one knew how to navigate me through the program. And I went to finally someone navigated me to a individual BDO at Bank of America. And I spent time going back and forth. And sure, it could help me. At the end of the day, he said, just get me a LLC, I'll get you $250,000. Well, I needed $1.3 million, so that didn't really help me. And I realized that there really aren't anybody, there isn't anybody out there who has the expertise or that I could go to help me get the financing, or at least I couldn't find one at that time. And I said, it's going to be, if there are people out there like me, which I imagine there are, who need SBA financing and don't have this resource for it, probably be a good business. And hence, we started SBA Loan Group. It wasn't easy in the beginning because there's a lot of things that people were, I don't know. I know you're from Canada, but how French can we get? There's a lot of BS going out there, going around. Nobody could pinpoint exactly how the program worked. One person told me this, and I'm talking about actual bankers, until I realized it's not the bankers that you have to speak to, it's the people in the basement, the underwriters. And to President Obama's credit, he expanded the program. He saw the need, and he raised the limits from, I think it was 2.1 at that time, or 2.3 in 2012, and raised it up to $5 million. And a lot of banks got more involved, and they sort of learned the ropes, knowing some my banking background or investment banking background, and how businesses operate or work and their needs, and learning and developing relationships with banks, we sort of develop our process about how we can process SBA loans. And that's what we did. That's how I got to this point. And thank God, we grew every year.
That's awesome. I love your background. How, first of all, you're the first CEO that I've had on the episode that's from Brooklyn. And so thank you very much for joining. I'd love to have people all around the country on here. So, we all get to see that we are the same and we go through a lot of the same challenges, but we have a lot of unique pieces about us. And your background is very unique on how you've gotten to where you were. If I were to ask for my listeners on your first day, when you were the CEO for the first day, what was going through your mind? What was your emotions? What was your fears? What was your wanting for accomplishments? I know that's an awful lot in a question, but
That is an awful lot of the question. I'll try to answer all aspects of it. First of all, as when you sit back today, and even when we're talking now, when you say CEO, I don't look at it as any prestigious title. And maybe if you're Elon Musk or Donald Trump, you're something. I don't look at myself as being something super special that I have a title CEO. First day of your business is like any business. And again, I'm not looking at myself as, oh, I'm the CEO, let's start making decisions. Your decisions are based on what you have to do to start making money. And that could be as simple as buying a desk, getting your phone hooked up, getting the internet. What do I need to put into place in order for people to contact me or for me to contact them and start processing deals? So fears. You have fears today. What happens if the laws change and this business is not viable anymore? If they say you can't be broker anymore, what if you don't? As your business grows, and I guess we'll talk about that a little bit later, when you get to the point where you have an overhead of $100,000, $200,000 a month, that's where it's more scary. When you're sitting in day one, in a way, it's just as scary as how you're going to come up with the $4,000 a month that you have to come up with expenses, right, for employees. So I don't think that fear necessarily goes away. You have to be motivated to do your best and know that you are in the right place and in the right business. Now, that being said, there are hundreds, thousands, not hundreds of thousands of businesses that fail every single year. The success rate of a startup, I think, is maybe 30%. I don't know the exact statistic. And that doesn't mean success, that they're super successful, meaning that they survive. My father had a great saying and has a great saying, should be well,
He used to say, there's no ugly babies in the world, right? No one comes and says, you know, a father, a mother doesn't come and say, look, this baby, it's ugly, right? But it's mine. Everybody's baby is gorgeous, is beautiful. Look how cute this baby is. And that's, I think, every business or entrepreneur or CEO feels about their business. Your baby is the most beautiful baby in the world. You go out with that attitude. And when you approach a prospect, you come with an attitude that I am providing the best service when it comes to SBA loans. Today, I could say that that's true, but when you're first starting, who the hell knows?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, in terms of, I hope I answered everything you asked. There's quite a loaded question. So day one, you're just thinking, let me rephrase. Day one, you already started, right? If I'm talking about not conceptual, we're open for business. We're looking for clients. Give us a call. Just pounding the pavement. I'm not thinking about CRMs and Google AdWords and trade shows. Yes, we'll be thinking of trade shows, how to get there and pay for that. I remember in the first year, sort of debating, should I go to a show called CES, which is Consumer Electronics Show, and it would be about, we didn't have a booth or anything. I was just going to walk the floor. It was like $3,000 just to go there for 2 days. That's a lot of money when you're starting a business, you know? And should we, should we not? And yes, you should. You got to go broke. You got to take everything you have and put into your business because you believe in it. If you don't believe in it, and you're not willing to take that risk, then how strong is your business really?
Exactly. You know, that humble approach that you use, I think, is very strong for our listeners to understand. It's about being humble. It's about going out there. You're right. The $3,000 to $4,000 to start with in the very beginning may as well be $400,000 because it's how much money you have. And I like that humble approach that you use. Because a lot of CEOs have been taught that, oh, you are better than, you're at the top of the chart. The ego gets stuck into that place. And that ego creates a lot of diversions and changes to different places where you actually should be going. Because you think someone says, I should be here, but the reality is, no, you should be working on here. Like, you're right. Why would you be opening up a CRM right to begin with on day one? Yeah. And you're looking at your modeling, like you have.
Did you have? We have two CRMs that we pay for every month. I don't use it. I still don't use it. I can't even tell you your login name, let alone my password. So, those are glitzy, shiny, sparkly lights or neon lights that could be distractions. Not saying there isn't value to them. My employees use it. People in the company utilize it. And if I need to get something out of that system, I'll call one of my employees and say, can you get me this and this contact? Or can you shoot out this email blast? But I don't get hung up in the again, I'll call it the glitz and glamour of it. We have marketing campaigns, and I have my cell phone number on a lot of advertisements. Call me directly. I'm still here to talk to the person who's looking for $20,000, even though we don't deal with that small of a loan, but I take the time and talk to them. Many people are shocked. They call up the phone in the office and I answer. If I'm available, I'm going to answer. And like, I'd like to speak to Yankee. And I'm, yeah, that's me. How about this is Yankee? I'm like, yeah, wow, that was easier. Someone says, can we schedule a Zoom or a Google Meets? Like, just call me. You're available now. I have 5 minutes. Pick up the phone. And if I'm not available, I'll text you and call you back. I don't get hung up in the titles, and maybe my corporation or our business is not as large as it should be or where I could sort of have that title and act like a gentleman. I don't know what the right word is where, oh, you want to talk to me, you got to go through a person or two people. To me, I'm still here to do business. I'm still here to process loans. I'm here to answer any questions you can because that's my business.
Well, I hear your humbleness again. I hear your personal touch. And that brings me to the culture of your people. How do you teach the culture of the people that work with you? That they follow that culture, that they want to be part of it. Like, because taking a company and starting a company, that's a very large challenge. How do you deal with that?
It's a very good question. And from my perspective, You cannot teach it. It's either you have it or you don't. And it's a very interesting conversation. We talk about cultures of companies. I have clients who talk about their culture. This is their, and that's fine. Everybody has different different ways of doing different things. I am very old school. You may say I'm a little bit modern because, you know, I would still write with a pen and paper. So I have a digital pen and paper, but it's still a pen and paper. That's just the way I am. The culture of the company is that mindset. We have one of our top guys today. When he first started, he was coming from a bookkeeping position and he came into the company. And I remember very clearly, and he was going to be more on the underwriting side and sort of fulfilling tasks that are takeaway tasks from people who are still producing. And he was looking to make more money from where he was, but he didn't want to go crazy. He didn't want to be a business owner. They didn't want him to work 24/7. And I always tell people in this industry, in order to be successful, you have to live it and breathe it 24/6. Where I'm Jewish and we keep Sabbath and I'm religious, so I don't work on the Sabbath. So it's 24/6. And what I mean by that is you're constantly thinking about your deals. When I go to bed at night, even if I'm listening to a podcast, mm-hmm. I'm put that in the background and I'm looking at the emails that I missed or thinking about how to structure a specific deal if it's a problem, so that the next morning I could try to get new clients and finish what we have on the table.
Yeah.
So I told him so he called me once. He's on his way home. He says, "I'm about to go into my house. I want to shut off my phone. Is there anything you need?" It was about 7 o'clock at night. So I laughed a little bit. I'm like, "Just this and this." And he says, "Why are you laughing?" I said, "Because in the next few months, maybe earlier, you're going to come to the realization that it's not possible to turn off your phone at 7 o'clock. And not because it's not physically, you're not going to want to." Sure enough, within maybe it was a few weeks, we're talking at 11 o'clock at night. So it's either you have it or you don't. I had another employee who I actually took from a bank because what we do is SBA processing. And we help companies get financing, specifically through the SBA program, which is very intense. There's a lot of rules, a lot of regulations. And besides the SBA rules and regulations, banks have their own regulations. But I figured, which was wrong, we take a bank loan officer who's familiar with SBA. This is all they do. And many of them have come to us and said, "We'd love to work with you because we do a lot of volume." They're limited to how much they can make. Even if they do $100 million a year, their bonus is capped. Over here, sky's the limit. I'm like, great. But they came from a 9-to-5 mentality, which does not work, at least in our business. And they're let's call it boxed or locked into their system that their bank was used to, or that they were used to their bank. Not used to figuring out, say, let me go back. When you're a bank, you have people coming to you for money.
Yep.
And you have the luxury of saying, this one is a no and this one is a yes. In our world, someone comes to us for money. Are they qualified? Where are they qualified? Not just in this bank. It's, you know, we work with 50 banks, more than 50 banks nationwide. So to develop that relationship and understand what all those banks are looking for, each one has their own criteria, just like you have, if you have multiple children, each one is different and unique, right? It's not copy and paste. So they cannot handle that. Now, I had one of the employees, don't ask me why, he came with conditions. Besides his salary, besides his bonus, he also wanted a separate cell phone for the business. He didn't want to mix his personal life cell phone with the same number. And I said before, my cell phone is printed. You could look up online. You could look up at our advertisements. My cell phone is there. If you need me, call me. And I tell clients, you can call me till 12 o'clock at night without a problem because I'm up late anyway. After 6 months, not one deal was closed. I don't even think he had more than 3 deals in the pipeline, which weren't really going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We had a conversation and he left on his own. He realized that it's not working out and he turned in his cell phone. And then again, this just goes to show a little bit of our trust in the culture of our company. Sorry, let me look at his cell phone bill. You know, we would be paying for it, but what phone calls has he made? This is a business phone call. It's not personal stuff that I should feel uncomfortable looking at. This was mm-hmm. who that we paid for. There was one phone call made from that phone in 6 months. So what was the need of the cell phone? I have no idea. In my opinion, I think it would be embarrassing. I would rather say that I make all my phone, all the phone calls are made from my personal cell phone, especially if I'm not doing work. So he did not fit into our culture, right? He needs a position where someone is feeding him business and he's not a decision maker. When I say decision maker, in our company, when you come to us and you're assigned to a loan broker, I don't like the word loan broker, I'll call it a loan expert. They are working the deal from start to finish. It's not taking it, your information, and just pushing the paper along to the next person. They have to live, breathe, and understand SBA product. And want to, and understand the business owner, and develop a relationship with the business. I have business owners or clients that 2 weeks after the deal is closed, they call us or call me and say, "What's up, Yankee? I'm like having PTSD. I'm used to talking to you every single day. I feel like I have to call you." No problem. I thought you know something wrong. And because of that, it's an intimate relationship. We are learning and understanding our client's business from start to finish. And that is the only way I can advocate for them when it comes to the bank. You know, not every deal, it's not simply that, oh, just come to us and we're going to be the person who's going to represent you and you have everything you need to qualify. An SBA loan or a business loan in the financing world is very difficult to get. And you have to have somebody who understands you and can represent you properly to argue the case to the bank, because it's a fight. You know, banks don't want to give money. Banks want your money as deposits, and that's it. If you're explaining them why they should give you a loan, which is part of our job, then hopefully you get it.
Well, that shows once again your heart for the people that you want to help, that you're there to help. It shows your humbleism again. It shows your team has to work in that manner.
Oh, yes. I have to say, one of the things I love about our business is that while we're able to make money, which is a goal for myself and my family, we are really helping people. And we are helping people in a tremendous way. I could point out many clients who were doing okay or doing well, but because of the loan that we're able to get them, they were able to increase their business tenfold, even 100 times, not exaggerating. And it's here, that's an old client. This is a client calling me right now. You see, it's on my cell phone, not on the phone. If he's working on a deal right now, if it's going to happen, it's going to be our fourth financing for them.
So your repeat business really brings back and shows what you've done.
Take this client as an example. The first loan we got them was a working capital loan for inventory. He was in the e-commerce space. Now, today, we all know Amazon. We all know eBay. We all know Shopify. We all know Walmart. And you have online buying. But go back 10 years ago. Walmart was Amazon's a foreign concept, right? Once in a while, people have a package. Today, you come home from work. Where you come home from school, you come home from wherever you're coming from, and if you don't have a package from Amazon waiting for you, you feel bad about yourself. Years back then, the banks didn't understand e-commerce, and they weren't sure it's going to survive. All those old enough to remember the dot-com bubble, but only real estate bubble. Who said it's going to be around in 5 years? Who said it's going to be around in 10 years? So it was a very difficult process to get e-commerce companies money, and I can tell you there are three banks that we were able to push through the first e-commerce deal ever that they did. And from then, can't say, but one of them has done probably over $100 million of financing with us in the e-commerce space. So this company in particular, we were able to get them a loan for $1.5 million. Now, may not sound like a lot of money, but for a company that's doing $25 million a year in sales, and it could not get financing, it's a tremendous opportunity. And with the money, he was able to almost double his business. Then he needed his own warehouse. So we got him financing to buy a warehouse. We got him 100% financing. Two years later, he grew out of that space. And thank God he's kept on rolling the money. Obviously, he was a good businessman. He is a good businessman. And he sold that warehouse for a nice profit and moved into a larger warehouse and got the financing for that, right? For the shortfall. He had a 1031 exchange, for all those who know what that is. And now he's looking, so that warehouse he bought, the second warehouse he bought, the first one was about $4.3 million, if I remember correctly. The second one was about $9.5 million. Called me the other day that he has offers for $25 million on the warehouse that he bought, which
that's
if he was not able to get his first loan and get the financing, brother, which were not easy deals, that's a tremendous gain. I mean, by default, and I was curious, most of the people, if you look in Brooklyn, you mentioned before, Brooklyn is a very interesting area. And many people had businesses back in the 60s and 70s who bought warehouses, bought their brick and mortar locations by default, just because they're worried about being thrown out or if their lease expires, what are they going to do with their business? They are multimillionaires, if not worth hundreds of millions of dollars just by buying this property. People don't realize the value. If you can't afford it, I'm not saying to stress your business in owning your own property, not just from being your own landlord, but the potential for the future. And I guess that's the perfect example. So now you're going to sell that and buy another warehouse.
I see a lot of value that you bring to your clients. And it makes sense for the stepping progress that's today, tomorrow, and the future. You're able to help them out and work it through there. But I want to come back to you for a second. And I want to come back to you in this of a work-life balance. That's a lot. How do you handle your work-life balance? How does your team handle their work-life balance? I know it has to be part of your passion, like, as you explained, but how do you take the time for Yankee and his family, Yankee, to relax? You know, how do you do that?
It's another great question, a hard question. I'm very bad at that, if I'm being honest. Years ago, going back to my New York Life time, there was a guy named Sam Friedman who was very successful. He was probably the most successful agent in New York Life. And he came and gave us a class on sales and balancing your life. And at that time, which I realized today he was wrong, but at that time he brought up a point which I thought was actually pretty cool. And he said he works nonstop, like 24/6. And someone asked, how do you deal with your family life? And he said, so he's missed recitals, he missed baseball games, and he misses a lot of those things, and what are called little things, which today I realize they're bigger things. They're not just little things. But what he does do is twice a year, sometimes three times a year, he shuts down for 2 to 3 weeks. And when he says shut down, that means he's still working relatively remotely. At that time, remember, there was no cell phones, there's no Wi-Fi. On a plane and say, oh, the Wi-Fi is not working. You're, oh my God, like somebody died. It's exactly without Wi-Fi. And, you know, working remote was a lot different. Maybe it was a fax machine, but he took his kids to Switzerland to ski for 2 weeks. He would go to Hawaii. He would take them to Israel. He would take them to Utah, Montana, different. He says, my kids, maybe didn't have any better recitals, but my kids been to Italy and been to Venice and been to Paris and been to Israel. And they've seen the Eiffel Tower, and they've actually been to the Louvre, and they could tell you what Caravaggio paintings look like. And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, that's true. So let me do that. Let's say we'll go away for a holiday. We'll extend it for a week. But I find myself working. So I'm a very bad example on how to balance that life. What I try to do is even if we go on a trip, so there's times I'm working on answer the phone, but let's say you give an hour here, an hour there, and I'm trying to be as focused as I possibly can. But I'm very bad at that. I am very bad at that. So,
well,
example, but my employees, to your extent, like we just came back from a trip, and I always encourage them. When we go, we do a lot of trade shows. So we're flying. Be 4 days, 5 days. I was just in Vegas from the 3rd until the 11th. 11th or 12th? 12th, sorry. Myself, and that's being away, and it's being away over the Sabbath, the weekend. And my employee who came with me, he brought his wife. And I always encourage it, bring your wife. If you want to bring your family, if they can, to this time. And that's what I try to do as well. I try to bring them on those type of trips. I try to these days work from home as often as I can, like this, at least I'm there. And then I could, it's very hard for me to get away from what I'm doing. And I jump from one thing to the next. Maybe that's what also makes me successful, but I'm trying to always catch up. So I always feel like if I'm, this is me, if I'm going to miss something, if I don't answer that person who called me in the next hour, I'm going to miss him. Maybe he's going to go somewhere else as a client. I'm facing that, but it's just not true. It's not true, but I still have that gut feeling. So I stop renewing, I call the client, then I'll continue. So I'm pushing off, let's say, paperwork or emails or things that I'm doing that doesn't engage somebody else for the times when I have to engage somebody else. Because I'm very bad at that. I have to get better, at least with the family life. So again, what I am able to do with today's technology is I can sit at home and I try to help out as much as I can. But at night, so maybe from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night, the kids go to bed. I'm less involved. That doesn't mean I'm not going to answer a phone call or look at an email. And then I'll continue at 10 o'clock. And as I said before, my clients call me till 12 o'clock at night. I don't have a problem with that, because I'm up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning anyway.
So what I'm hearing, Yankee, and I've heard this actually from one other CEO. There's different CEOs on the work-life balance where, we got to keep it all in different jars or different buckets. But then the CEO, this is what I'm hearing from you, is you keep it into one jar because that's your life, that's what you love, that's what you do. And then you bring your family in there, you bring your people in that jar and make it part of it. And that is a technique that works very well for certain CEOs. And some they've got to have, oh, 5 o'clock, I got to shut my phone off, and I got to do this, and I got to do that. They hear all the marketing and all the stuff around them, and it's what do they buy in? And that's a big part of what this show is about, is helping people go, wait, I'm not alone. Wait, this is how this this is how look at how Yankee handles this. Oh, I feel the same way, and I do that. And Yankee's got a million plates that he's got to spin during this. And some of them you can have family and have that for that life bucket filled. But then there's stuff that isn't. Like, let's talk about, for example, when you're looking at new products, new ways to do things, you have to make decisions. How do you handle those decisions? What processes do you have? Because a lot of our CEOs don't understand all of those processes that put in place.
This episode is powered by Onist AI. Onist's optimized onboarding process and minimized documentation result in an expedited and seamless financing journey for clients, enhancing their contentment and commitment. Through identity verification, financial data validation, and creditworthiness assessment, our software empowers companies to make well-informed financing choices, bolster application speed and customer uptake by 30%, and cut operational costs by a significant 70% with Onist AI. For more information, visit onist.ai.
That's another good question, but I want to go back, if I can, for a moment. Another thing that actually, I think it was Sam Friedman who said this as well, which I'm still waiting to happen, is he said, do now what others don't, so you'll be able later what others cannot. And the idea is if you build up your business or make enough money where you don't have to work later on, let's go when you're 40, 50, 60, and then you could have as much time as you want to spend with your family. And there's a mindset of, everybody wants to be a billionaire. I want to be a billionaire. I don't know that I want to be a billionaire. I wouldn't mind having that money, don't get me wrong, but it comes with a set of challenges. As it's hard enough for me to manage life, family life, and business life and separate them now, I can only imagine being on a higher level, what that entails. Then there's a reason why Jeff Bezos decided to step down, right? He has it. So then the question comes, what is enough money problem? I don't know I don't have that number. I don't have that set period. And going back to your next question, which was, how do we deal with decisions? That's a very good question. As best as I can, if I'm being honest, I'm not a technology person. This morning I had a Zoom call with a technology company, and they're talking about CRMs and integration and background and marketing campaigns. I'm not stupid and I understand a lot of the phrases, but I don't understand the intricate details. As you said before, I don't use my CRM, I don't use my Salesforce or my HubSpot. I don't know how to. Can I take the time to learn it? Sure. I don't know if it's valuable for me to learn it. Maybe it will or maybe it won't. So you have to make a decision. I say to myself, okay, I know that I'm successful in bringing in clients and opening up relationships with banks and getting deals done by whatever I've been doing till now and getting better at it. I should be sticking to that. I could underwrite a deal, but I have people who could underwrite a deal better than me today. I could maybe structure it better than them, and I could sell it better to the bank, and I can negotiate better. So then let me focus on that because that's going to bring me more money, and this person can do it better than me. And it's a little bit of a punch or a hit to your ego by realizing that you cannot do everything. But that is the first point, as well as what are you best at? Focus on those things. And there are people that are better than you, believe it or not. You may be one thing, but there's going to be somebody who's better at other parts of your day-to-day activity. And delegate. This famous line again, where the cemetery is filled with irreplaceable people. Right? Is that possible? So when it comes to making decisions, I try to do as much research as I can with a limited amount of time. Meaning you can't spend months on making a decision. Once you make that decision, don't second guess yourself. You keep on going and move on to the next thing. If that decision fails, you could learn from that mistake. Again, I'm not talking about something that's detrimental to your cash flow to an extreme extent. You're very rarely going to face those decisions. What I mean by that is if you're starting out your company, your first decision or your first major decision is going to be, do I hire the next person? I'm talking about if you're starting with by yourself. You may start off with one person, then your next major decision is going to be, do I hire another person? Because that is salary, typically. Even if there's a commission structure involved, that commission is going to feed into your pocket. So that's your first major decision. Is it worthwhile? And then how much does that person have to make or bring into the company in order to fulfill my goal? If that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah.
Right. Any person here has, if you're going to pay somebody $100,000 a year, okay, what is that person doing for you? To some degree or another, it has to make you money. Otherwise, there's no point. Now, it could be making you money by taking away tasks from your daily job or your daily operations that you could now focus in other places and make more money. Or they're actually themselves going to bring in money to the company. Now, if they bring in $200,000 in revenue, so there's no expenses to what they're doing, then they doubled for you. It's a double value.
Yeah.
Give them $100,000, you just made $100,000 profit by. And if you could, obviously, if you could do that, you'd hire 30 people every day, make the $3 million a month.
Well, that brings me to my next question about scaling, right? Is absolutely right. It is scaling. You got to replace yourself. I love that you're humble that you say, hey, I've got to have the right people focus on what you do best, bring the right people around you to help you. You'll have mentors probably on the outside. I'm going to make a suggest or make a comment that there's mentors that throughout your life have probably helped you, given you ideas and ways to walk through it. But now you have to scale your company because you're taking your company and you're growing it. You've got your culture and mentality. Everyone's working there. And how do you scale it? Because scaling with people is the largest and the slowest part to do it. It's great, but it's hard to go from 100 deals a day to pick a number to 10,000 deals, because it's hard to find those initial people that can do this 624 that you're talking about. So when you're wanting to scale, what do you use technology a fair bit, I'm assuming, for that? Is that your main play, or what is your process on looking at scaling?
So that's a very good point. We don't use technology very much, and not to its fullest extent. The technology that we'd use in scaling a business would be things in advertising or getting a message across. That could be from Instagram, LinkedIn, excuse me, email blasts, which don't really work, at least not for us. on the technology side. Believe it or not, old school has been working for us, where you go to actual trade shows and meet people face to face. You and I were talking, you know, before the program about different technology that's coming out that maybe would help our industry. I haven't seen it yet. I am looking at different systems that may be able to help us with the marketing, such as Zoom Info. I don't know if you, heard of them. And if they can work, and the only way to find out is by trying, right? And maybe this also answers your other question. I've had already two calls with them, two Zoom meetings. I'm not convinced yet. Right? It's a very fancy tool, and there's great things it does. But for me specifically, does it help my business? So that is when it comes to technology, again, don't get distracted by the glitz and the glamour of it or the shininess of this new toy. What is it actually going to do for you, right? If let's take my industry. For me to make the phone ring, I can make it ring nonstop. All I have to do is market out there. We do billions of dollars in funding. We work with SBA program. SBA could deal with startups, which I don't deal with because I know it's very difficult to get, but they allow that, right? Deal with startups. If you're a business owner who needs up to $5 million, give us a call. Look at it, where we have 100% success rate, and we'll be the ones to help you. It will not stop ringing. And I get calls all the time from people who don't qualify, but my advertisements are very direct. And I tell you, if you have less than 680 credit score, you will not qualify. You're not making money that will enough money on your tax returns. I write this, that you could support your family, cover your taxes, and have excess cash flow. You're not going to qualify. And guess what? People still call who don't qualify.
Absolutely.
When the PPP loans came out, the EIDL loans came out, I said, we do not do PPP loans. We do not do EIDL loans. And I got thousands of calls for EIDL loans. Why? Because they research and they go on Google and they find out that we are the top ranking SBA packager in the country. So they're calling us for those type of transactions, but we don't do it. Mm-hmm. So making the phone ring is very easy for me. But to make the phone ring and on the other end, I have a qualified individual, a business owner. I don't market to everybody, right? If you're an employee, unless you're looking to buy a business where I can help you with financing for that, I can't, there's nothing for me to sell to you. I need a CEO. I need an owner of a business. And those are the people that we're targeting. So how do I get specifically to them? And with a certain criteria, I can't deal with a loan that's $10,000 or $50,000 or $100,000. I need to deal with $250,000 and above. Otherwise, it's not economical, right?
Yeah.
My process. Yeah. So when it comes to technology, I'm researching. That is probably my number one challenge today, is technology and what system is out there to help me grow my business. AI looks great. I still write my own LinkedIn posts. I don't use ChatGPT. I do use a third party writer where I'm a ghostwriter and I talk to them and they tell them what I would like to express. They write up posts for me and then I will edit it. And the reason why I do that is I want it to sound like me. If you're doing business with me, it's because you're doing business with me or my company and our culture. If I don't talk properly or speak properly and my grammar is off, that is who I am. I could try to better myself. And until I do better myself, this is who I am. And I want you to know who I am. I don't want to pretend to be some fancy schmancy person with different college degrees, which I don't have, and be all proper, because that's not who I am. Mm-hmm. Now, be the best person I could possibly be. And I try to better myself and I try to learn and I've taken courses. And I was just saying, they should maybe take another course to figure that out. So I don't want to be, this can come out sounding bad. I don't want to come across more professional than I am. I'm professional in the way I conduct myself. I am professional in the way I keep my confidentiality with our clients and their information. But I'm not super proper where I need ChatGPT to tell me or to describe what I'm looking for. I'm going to say it in my words, and I want it to be in my words, so you know who you're dealing with.
That's back to your humble piece. And you know what? And I agree. We're always growing. And we want to continue to grow. If we're not growing, that usually means we're in the graveyard you mentioned about earlier.
I have clients that I've never met. Literally, I've never met. And the only way I know what they look like is from their driver's license, which I don't remember every single person. And people come over to me and like, hey, like they recognize me either from my website or from advertisements, and I get to meet them. But we had such a strong relationship because we speak almost every day, at least while we're doing the deal. So I don't want to lose that. You know, I don't know if technology is going to take that away. And if that is the case, I probably would stay away from it, me personally, as long as it's not detrimental to my business.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And I agree with you on technology, that it should assist you, help not change you, not change what it should take the mundane things away from you, not make your business different and about the technology, because humans are the most, we're here for a human experience. Right. And whether it's business or whichever, we're here for that. We have to grow together.
United, it makes sense that they have some type of machine that could work out for me and help me lose weight. That I'm very into.
I'd love to have that same machine, Yankee. I really would. I'd love to thank you. We're out of time today. We like to keep episodes to about half an hour, and I've talked a little bit longer with you because I've really enjoyed the conversation. I think your input and your insights is going to help a ton of the CEOs that were watching this and give them the different aspect. I like the glass or the jar all in one. And how you manage your people, how you grow is important messages that you've given out to everyone. So thank you very much for your time and joining us on this podcast.
And hopefully there was enough content in there that people could benefit. And my number is listed if anybody has any questions.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Mind Matters.